Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this rainy Wednesday morning. It is the 6th of September, 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, and a delight to have you with us. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. If you write to any other address, we won't see it, so you might as well save your time. panel@wamc.org. It just happens all the time. People say, why don't you read my letter? Well, if you sent it to the right address, maybe we would see it. Otherwise, we don't.
But that's still a big maybe because we get a lot of letters.
That's right. You're absolutely right. That's a big maybe. Well, anyway, we have a great panel. Let me introduce them to you, and we'll get started here. First, we have, Teresa Bourgeois is here. She is a communications consultant, and we are thrilled to have her with us.
So delighted to be here.
Good morning. We missed you Monday.
After 19 innings of Red Sox baseball. Who won, Joe?
You know what happens? The games take longer when you take off the Apple Watches.
That, by the way, folks, is an inside joke.
No, it's on our list today. We have our joke.
Just as long as everybody understands what you're talking about, which is that the Boston Red Sox were stealing signs using an
That's
Apple.
Not what I was talking about. I was talking about that the Boston Red
the
Sox
big win.
Went 19 innings last night.
Oh, really?
At the bottom of the ninth. Yeah. They had Jackie Bradley Jr., major catch. I'm sure all the audience is excited about this.
No, well, we know this about our audience. They love sports.
So how many throws from center field
to home to get the guy out at home.
Yeah.
And save the day. And so game's all tied up. They go another 10 innings.
No.
Played 19 innings.
Oh, my goodness.
So this is all I got to say now. I'm tired.
I bet.
And the Red Sox won?
The Red Sox won in 19.
And how many games out did this make them now?
I think there's three now because the Yankees lost last night to the Orioles.
Oh, that's not
Orioles.
Good for the
That's
Yankees.
Very good.
Well, it's not good for American imperialism.
Anyway. All right. Sorry, audience. Sorry.
I got it out of my system. We can talk about American imperialism a little bit later in the program. Aaron Mayer is with us as well. He's past president of the Sierra Club, and we're thrilled to have him with us. Thank you very much.
Well, good morning.
For being with us. And Alan Chartok here. Good morning, sir.
Yo.
How are you?
Don't ask.
All right, I won't.
Everything's fine.
It's let me get to the stories of the day. And again, we welcome your input, panel@wamc.org. As simple as that, panel@wamc.org. We want to talk about DACA. This was the big story yesterday. We, of course, mentioned it on the program because we knew sort of where this was headed, although there have been some curveballs over the last 24 hours. So Donald Trump decides to end DACA and doesn't come out and do it, but sends Jeff Sessions out to do it.
His old friend, Jeff Sessions.
the often maligned Jeff Sessions, who goes out and says that this is the law and we have to enforce the law, and this is important. And here we go. So he makes that statement. Then they give Congress 6 months to act on it.
Trump gives Congress
him 6 months to act on it. And then Trump tweets late yesterday that this
gibberish.
Is, right? What?
Gibberish.
Basically says, you have 6 months to do the right thing, and if you don't, I'll take another look at it. Which I don't know what that means.
In his case, it means nothing.
It means
so
nothing.
You punt it, and then you eventually, you had the decision. Like, it was your decision to make, right?
Well, it's one of those amazing things about Donald, and Donald is a showman and salesman and his art of earned media. I mean, here he clearly makes good on a campaign promise to go after DACA. Again, he sends out Jefferson Beauregard Sessions to do the act. And I think this is really serious. I think that this is one of the things that Jefferson Beauregard Sessions did most of his career was, his anti-immigration stance, just even as a senator. So him coming out and, shooting the Constitution and asking questions later by just blatantly declaring it illegal without, where is the judicial memo? Where is the Justice Department letter of law or memo of law on his position? Rather than just making this blanket declaration, they, again, pulled the trigger. And then we have Trump, after the heat comes down, doing this tweet thing, which is just kind of absurd. So I think the issue is right now is that folks need to prepare for the worst. I think that we've known Donald Trump. Anytime he says he loves something, you better run for cover. Because remember, every one of his appointees that he let go, he loved them tremendously. And so
he's a liar. Put it another way.
Well, it just, it's so disingenuous and weird when he says, you know, I love these people, I love these people. And in many cases, they're not children, they're young adults, but I love them with all my heart, get out.
No. Right. I love them with all my heart, except for the ones who were in the gangs, and that's why we want
to do this. He made a point to make, again, that not-so-subtle dig, again, pulling at that old campaign trope of the gangs and the killers and the thugs. Which, as anybody knows, that anybody who has any alien status or even DACA status, had they run afoul of the law, they would have been on the first bus out.
I'm going to go. I do want to go to this point for a moment because, and I'm going to try to rely here on Teresa, which I'm asking you, and I assume you know this because I know you well enough that you know everything. So I'm going to ask you this question. But in the debate, we keep on going back to the pushing back to Obama and his policy and screwed it up. But from my understanding, this has been a policy that has been around in some form for many, many years prior to the Obama administration. Is that correct?
The DACA policy?
Yes.
I think what happened is by default, they just didn't focus on deporting these folks. And that there was there's been a long time agreement that these kids who came in should not be the focus of deportation. But what President Obama did after trying repeatedly calling for a legislative fix and the Republicans not being willing to do a legislative fix.
Well, let's be clear. This was part of the make Obama fail. They want to do anything to inflict as much legislative harm on Obama. So even if denying the immigration or action on immigration, again, denying him a win, was a critical part of the Republican agenda.
Right. But what he did say is that through his administrative action, is that gave a framework in which they could work legally. They would provide their information, and this is a big issue. If they provided their information, they could work legally, they could come out of the shadows, and that they were promised that the information that they provided, contact information and such, would not be used against them. And so this fundamental question about what will happen with that information, the Trump administration is refusing to answer. But let's step back. CNBC reported yesterday in their coverage of this. One of the things that strikes me is, what's the cost? So there's an enormous humanitarian cost to doing this. But for all these fiscal conservative Republicans, so-called fiscal conservative Republicans, what's the actual cost of physically deporting 800,000 people? And then what's the lost the lost revenue? So the study came out, NBC reports, $433 billion over the next 10 years. Texas alone will lose $6.1 billion in GDP.
Yeah. No, it's pretty amazing. But I think there's the other insidious side of this, too. I think that, and again, you pointed out that folks disclose that information. This is why I'm cheering the lawsuit to be announced by Attorney General Schneiderman and others challenging this. Because I think that when the government gave their full faith and word that you disclose this information, we're going to work on some sort of fix, but you're in this stasis of DACA while we work this out. Because I think the unwritten or verbally expressed point was that give us this information. And Obama being, as they say, very ritualistic, very legalistic, saying, look, we're going to daylight these folks. They're coming out. So there's integrity on their part. So the government will have to follow up and do its piece with regards to providing the legislative fixes and laws that would allow a pathway to citizenship. At the end of the day, there's this. I think the challenge is going to come down. What does the as I say, the letter of the law, as that legal memo that allowed for them to disclose this information, to enter DACA status, and what is the commitment of the government to them. I think there's also a dark economy side of this because, I mean, again, we have that private prison industrial complex. predominantly in the Midwest and in the South. And one of the things that it makes money off of is these detentions and these holding immigrants or illegal aliens over. So the issue of the potential roundup of this population, I would say watch the stock of these private prison corporations that are going to be, as I say, potentially winning, having an ugly windfall from this.
Well, interesting. But there is one other thing here that I just heard on NPR, of all places. apparently, their correspondent, their justice correspondent, was saying that even Obama had to go to his attorney general to ask whether this was legal. Mm-hmm. And the attorney general, as I heard the story on NPR this morning, said, well, if you did it en masse, it might not be legal. But if you do it on a case-by-case basis, it is legal.
Exactly.
That may be, cutting hairs, somewhere along here.
It's a very important technical point, and it is under that point of them disclosing individual information, which is a case-by-case. I think it's very, important that, there is a legal memo and hence it's not illegal. I guess the challenge is whether or not that process. But the point of the matter is Jefferson Sessions, yes, Mr. Beauregard, has basically blown past that. He shot the Constitution on the matter. And the point of the matter is that they could have easily sent up legislation to Congress to act on. This was a conscious attack.
Well, therein is
And this was part of that theme of being anti-Hispanic.
And he got caught between a rock and a hard place.
And,
I think Aaron and Teresa, I think what happened here is that when those kids started pouring out by the tens of thousands in the streets yesterday, they took a look at this and said, uh-oh, not only that.
I think it's the business community that freaked him out.
And then the biggest and richest men in America— and women, by the way, came out and did their thing. But I think it's also that so many people took to the streets yesterday that it became problematic for them. And you had the Speaker of the House covering his behind also in this.
We're coming up on the end of the federal fiscal year. And of all the headaches that are right now looming, everything from, having continuing legislation for the operation of government, et cetera, this is, an earned media event to take, and folks, don't lose sight of the Russia thing, to take the heat off of what's going on with investigation.
Shiny, bright object.
So this is a shiny, bright object. But again, I think part of his pullback was that he underestimated, how significant this would be. And this is one of those things that are happening in every congressional district across the country.
But Aaron, isn't it also possible that he has something which nobody ever suspected here? Maybe not his whole heart, but a little place in which he understands how nasty this really is. He's a guy who says whatever he thinks, and I think that's what he was saying. Look, quote, I love these people. Now, most of us don't believe he loves anybody. It's possible. Look, he's got a wife from a foreign country.
He's a son of immigrants. He's not a native.
Oh, he's a son of
something.
Son of something.
Yes.
I think you dance with the one who brung you. And the ones who brung you are the Mercers and Bannon and Sessions and people like that.
Right.
And his base. And they are true believers. But as somebody said, and Aaron, I think you're exactly right, that first of all, this is a shiny object to distract attention, I think probably from a couple of things, from the Russian thing, but also in the investigation, but also from this tax package that they want to move through without people paying attention to what's in it. But as someone said, and I can't remember who I read a lot yesterday, but this is like pulling the piston out of the hand grenade and tossing it to the Congress. And, it's going to explode all over them. And they haven't been able to deal with this in 15 years. And how are they going to deal with it in six months?
But let me come back to you, Teresa, for a second, just to ask this question as a spokesman for the, middle-class voter, bourgeoisie. Yeah.
Thank you, Alan.
You could see it coming, right?
It was the first time anyone ever did that, Alan.
Is that right?
No,
it was not.
No.
Okay, but assuming that I'm interested in who receives the message, the Bannon-inspired message. We know the base likes this stuff. But the polling are all saying that this program is overwhelmingly well received by the DACA program.
2-1.
By everybody. That's huge.
2-1. Well, it's
66%.
What do you mean?
In other words, who
does it help? How does it help them?
No, politically. Who is receptive to the DACA program? And it turns out, as Joe just said, 2-1 American people want this program because everybody knows somebody or about somebody
exactly.
who's in this thing.
Exactly.
Well, the interesting thing for me is what does it do to people like Congressman Faso and Congresswoman Stefanik and people like that?
It scares them, Teresa.
How do they respond to this? What side of this are they on?
We've been playing this cut. From a woman in Kingston who represents the area, mm-hmm. and she keeps saying again and again, it's what he's doing is not good enough. But even for John Faso, you know, who tends to carry the water for the president, he said this has to result in corrective legislation in legislation.
So
even though everybody wants to blame it on him, and I'm not fighting for him, I'll be honest with you, but I think he was going along with his own speaker, Ryan, who has a big problem with this.
How do they thread this needle? I think that it's a real legislative mess at a time, is exactly as Aaron says. There is a clock here, and there's so much that has to be done by September 30th, and they are not even close to being able to do what was on this before. And now you have Harvey, you have Irma, and you have Jose behind it.
I'm going to hold you there, Aaron. Sorry, go ahead.
We just have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Aaron Mayer, Teresa Bourgeois, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, and we'll be back right after this. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Nice to have you with us, Alan Chartok, Aaron Mayer, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We have letters to get to. I just want to talk about this because I heard it coming in an interview with Lindsey Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And Lindsey Graham is talking about how they do have to work on this, and they do have to work on DACA, and he believes that there should be a legislation, but then saying that there is no reason that this should not be tied to border security. Basically saying that whatever happens with the wall should then be tied to this. That I found interesting.
Well, that's what they've been saying now for about a week, that Trump wants to get his border wall money by tying it to a DACA fix. And so, first of all, didn't Trump say that the Mexicans were going to pay
yes.
for the wall?
Well, that's
for
what...
how long did he say the Mexicans were going to... Folks, Mexicans never were, never are going to pay for the wall. But that's what he said.
I don't know if the United States is going to pay for the wall either.
Well, we would. I mean, if
no,
the
no,
taxpayers...
we would if we had to. I'm not so sure there's an appetite for
but
that.
But you
wall.
Should not trade young people's lives for a wall. That is just a disgusting bargain.
But Graham.
But yes, seems, that's what
but,
they're going
to
try.
But even Graham seems to think isn't all that crazy about the wall.
But yeah, no, it's, yeah. but this is that that predictable Faustian canard that they offer up of saying, well, okay, we're going to hold, you know, an issue that's totally divorced from this, but, you know, here's an innocent population of 800,000 individuals in this country who's been waiting to have their status settled. They've been used as a political football, and I'm pounding the table, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, and yet, here is the other shiny object of this border wall that Mexico is supposed to.
Yeah,
put
but I want to go. No, one second. I just want to go to Joe's point for just a second, and that is because I think he's exactly right. They need to satisfy the other side. So the question is not necessarily a wall, but something that they can say offers security.
Right.
So context for this: the White House, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the White House press briefing after this, when she was asked repeatedly, and she repeatedly ducked answering, if the Congress sent him just a DACA fix legislation, would the president sign it? She then kept providing a litany of what should be in a comprehensive immigration bill. And one of the things that she said should be in a comprehensive immigration bill is more border security, including a wall. So what Graham and others are saying is more border security, yes,
right, sure.
wall, but, not necessarily.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But the problem is that Congress has tried for 15 years to pass a comprehensive immigration bill. I think the last one was Senator Kennedy, and I know he tried before he passed away to do a new comprehensive immigration bill. And they have not been able to come to terms on that, which is why you end up with these kids in the first
place.
But
has this changed? In other words, has the appetite changed for such legislation since the Kennedy days?
Well, some think that you could get through just a DACA fix. But there is little appetite or capacity right now to get through a comprehensive immigration reform bill. But any comprehensive immigration reform bill would, of course, include border security.
Well, let's really look to the big chase why the Republicans don't are stalling on comprehensive immigration reform. There is a misguided belief that if folks are coming in, these are going to be more voters to the Democratic Party base. At the end of the day, they feel that it will tilt the voting population or skew it in these key border red states to Democrats. That's an ugly, cynical part of this game.
So they know that they need him here to work, but they don't want him to vote.
Exactly. And this cuts right to the core. And the issue of border security, you know, during that 15 years, there's been a massive hire of Border Patrol agents. In fact, so many that they are suffering quality control issues. In fact, they had to, I guess, relax the processes upon whether the folks who are being considered candidates had a criminal past or conviction. There's a whole issue about just QC and quality control of just hiring, you know, people to fill these slots. And then the other issue is that really where this, you know, the juice is at? And the answer at the end of the day is no. The issue right now is really a antiquated policy that's backing up a canard that right now has been used as a political football to embarrass Obama. Now, it's come due, unfortunately, due to Trump. And hopefully, you know, we can see Congress move on this. But at the end of the day, we cannot take away, A, there's a serious issue, but there is also that very ugly, bigoted component that goes right back to his campaign of being anti-Hispanic, and that, again, with Jefferson Sessions, that a lot of these folks are prospective Democratic voters, etc. But at the end of the day, these are human beings. These are people that are in every single state. They're part of various parts of society, even military, and they deserve a path.
Right. Well, they wouldn't answer.
No, go ahead.
They would not. Huckabee Sanders in the White House will not answer the question, what about, and I don't remember the exact number of people in the military right now who are Dreamers, what is their status in 6 months? And the Justice Department, as of yesterday afternoon, maybe they have done it today, would not answer that question.
And from what I heard this morning from the Sarah
Huckabee Sanders.
No, the Justice Department spokesperson, yeah. Sarah Lopez. Justice Department was basically throwing it back in the White House and throwing it back in the Congress to answer those questions. We have letters. I want to get to those before our break. Let's do that.
Here we go. Martin.
Hi, Martin.
Martin's a good guy. Alan, Trump has no heart. Ending DACA is pure red meat for the base. From my review of pro-Trump news sites and discussion forums this morning, it is working. If hundreds of thousands of people get hurt in the process, it does not matter to him at all. And that's from Martin. And Naomi says, Trump hides with his generals. Good morning, penalty. Said
good
sorry.
Morning.
Good morning.
Trump hides with his generals plotting war while Sessions does his dirty work, tossing children to their death or worse. And Session appears to enjoy every bigoted, racist minute of it. DT lies, that's Donald Trump, no abbreviations ever under any circumstances. DT lies and lies and lies and uses the word love like an opioid that he keeps feeding to the masses to keep them docile. Donald Trump has no conception of love or even right or wrong, and that's from Naomi. And Ramon says DACA should never have been issued by the Office of the President. To the panel, DACA should never have been issued. Personally cannot stand Trump, but his move to correct this is the right thing to do. Whatever problems exist in the laws need to be addressed by Congress, not the President. If only, by the way, can I just intervene and say,
yes,
this is a guy who's made a specialty out of not giving anything to Congress and issuing as many executive orders as he possibly can.
Exactly.
And of course, if you care about the rule of law, which Sessions said this was all about the rule of law, then let's remember that he just pardoned Arpaio.
Oh, there is that. If only prior presidents had diligently enforced immigration laws, we would not have a 4 million plus illegals in the nation, which certainly is a problem to absorb in such a tight labor market. Amazed that so many on both sides of the aisle want to continue to the abuse of illegal immigrants in the workforce. It is another form of sanctimonious elitism that both the right and left seem to revel in. What both love is people can be exploited to their ends, and that's from Ramon.
Well, Ramon, one of the reasons why President Obama did this is because his concern that these folks were being exploited because they had to remain in the shadows. And the idea was if they came out of the shadows and that there was some system by which they were handled, then there would be less, not more, exploitation.
And I want to add to that notion of the tight labor market. The tight labor market is coming at the most significant income inequality. In other words, the trickle-down economics that have been in place for the past 35 years has increased the wealth and the capacity of the industrial and manufacturing and stock sector, while labor, its wages have cratered and jobs have been exported south. So the issue is not immigrants that are tightening the labor market. It is clearly the theory of trickle-down economics, and the theory of economics that Donald Trump is now doubling down on has failed. And so the tightening of the labor market and the lack of opportunities proving that giving tax breaks to businesses is not creating jobs.
Well, let's go to the tax bill for a second. I'm sorry, Alan.
No, go
please,
ahead.
You.
I was just going to say, look, let's face facts. Because of the previous presidential administrations, we are now at the apex of unemployment in this country. We have very few people that are unemployed. So to argue, we can't find people. There isn't a store in Great Barrington that doesn't have a sign out in front of it. You know, we're hiring right now. So you can't really say, as Ramon does, that these guys are stealing jobs from them. There's not enough people to do the jobs.
But not only
do you think the business community was so vocal yesterday and in the last several months on this? Because they need the workforce. But this income inequality issue is a really serious problem. And I think that's at the heart of a lot of the base of Trump support. Not all of it, but this income insecurity because of the widening gap. And the one thing that, you know, that Trump is pushing hard now on is a tax bill. And we don't know what's in that tax bill. They haven't put it on the table yet. They said it's wonderful and everybody should support it, but it's not on the table. But we have heard some things about it. And one of the things is that they want to tax people's 401ks.
Yep.
And the parts that we have heard about are going to widen the income gap.
Would that be double taxation if you do the 401k?
You want to tax it on the way in as opposed to on the way out, because if you tax it on the way in, you have a higher income. And tax it on the reason why you tax it on the way out is because you have a lower income.
Let's get a couple more letters, and then we've got to take a break in about 2 minutes.
Go ahead. Hi, panel, from Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
Hello, Andrew.
It's getting out of hand. It's really unfortunate that governance is currently aimed at such a small minority of the American population, that of Trump's base. Will there ever be a movement to do away with the Electoral College so that the majority of voters can have their say in presidential politics? Well, you know, I don't think so, because I think what's happened here is that there are some states that really benefit from the Electoral College, which is why it was put in place in the first place. But I am sure that if the Democrats regain control again, you'll see some movement in that, as in will there ever be? John says, don't discount the possibility that this is also about his stupid border wall. Even if Congress manages to pull itself together enough to pass decent legislation on this, he will hold it hostage till he gets the funding for that wall. And you know what? I would hold my nose and make the trade for the sake of the $800,000. Teresa is shaking her head vehemently no.
It's indecent.
It's a lot of money.
It's indecent.
Yeah. Hello, panel.
Hello.
With the potential loss of 800,000 DACA people, the U.S. deports its youngest group of workers, the very ones needed to counteract the aging, non-working, retired population.
Exactly. These are the people, the next generation, that are contributing to the Social Security. These are folks that you want. They're working. They're going into college. They're already in armed services. They're at all. In fact, it was amazing. A number of the emergency service workers, ambulance operators, and fire people in Hurricane Harvey down in Texas were DACA or Dreamers, and they're while they're right now saving Americans, they're right now worrying about their future.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we have more letters and much more to talk about. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this break. I do want to get to one aspect of DACA, which we have not talked about. We, I think, maybe mentioned to at one point, but, well, President Obama resurfaced yesterday and called President Trump's decision to end DACA wrong, self-defeating, and cruel. The former president said Tuesday that it is wrong for the Trump administration to end the DACA program. Let's be clear. The action taken today, he wrote, isn't required legally. It's a political decision and a moral question. Obama said in a lengthy statement posted on his Facebook page on Tuesday afternoon, following an announcement earlier in the day that the Trump administration will unwind the program pending action from Congress in the next 6 months. He wrote, quote, whatever concerns or complaints Americans may have about immigration in general, we shouldn't threaten the future of this group of young people who are here through no fault of their own, who pose no threat, who are not taking away anything from the rest of us. Kicking them out won't lower the unemployment rate or lighten anyone's taxes or raise anybody's wages.
Now, here's a guy, Obama, President Obama, who, of course, who many of us love, who is not only a brilliant thinker, substantive thinker, but he's also a brilliant politician.
And he happens to be a constitutional law scholar as well.
That's true. And he has kept himself out of this in the way that presidents often keep themselves out. But this is one he couldn't forego. And he had lots of others he could have done, but he didn't.
Correct.
But this one was above. He didn't do Obamacare, really. He
Correct.
Didn't even do that. But on this, he felt morally obligated and outraged, and so he had to do it. And you can only respect it.
As Dan Rather said, game on.
Well, the thing is that, you know, MSNBC did an excellent piece on the Immigration Act of 1924, and they talked about Albert Johnson. In fact, they did a beautiful arc of the story, which actually Senator Sessions was quoting the changes and the growth, but cryptically saying that we have not had such a shift toward white immigration since 1924. It was a brilliant piece that was done. And what at its core is really the moral question of where our nation is heading. And at that particular point in time, immigration naturalization policy was set by eugenicists. And it's an ugly legacy. And we're dipping back into that poison. So I'm not surprised that President Obama is stepping up. He's speaking to the moral fiber of our nation. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we recognize that there's a lot of damage that's being done to our nation institutionally. And I think him moving up and speaking up now into that space is just underscoring the institutional damage that's really being done to the fabric of our nation's civil society.
One of the things very quickly that's concerned me about this is wherever you are on the policy, one of the things that the president has an obligation to do is speak with a clear, consistent voice. And what you heard yesterday was really a cacophony of voices from the Trump administration.
And from his head.
And from him. So think of yourself if you're a DACA, if you are a dreamer, you know, which part of this do you listen to? Do you listen to Sessions, who says, we're going to deport you? Do you listen to the Department of the Homeland Security, who issued a release saying, you know, get ready to get out now? Do you listen to Trump, who was all over the place? Or do you listen to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who said, well, you know, we need to enforce the law, but we're going to enforce this as a priority in the same way it was enforced before, which meant that they didn't have deporting these folks as a priority. So separate from whether or not you believe in the big picture, the other problem here is that you have a president and an administration that's speaking from a cacophony of voices, no clear direction. And that in itself is a problem. And Congress really needs to step in. They need to do a clean DACA bill. They need to send him a DACA bill, up or down, sign it or don't, no wall, nothing else attached.
And why will they do that?
They will only do that if the business, if the business community pressures them, because they need the workers
and the money from the business community to run with.
Right. So that ultimately, This will be decided by whether or not the business community believes that they need this investment and they can't deal with the loss of income.
Microsoft, Teresa, sorry for interrupting, but Microsoft was incredibly aggressive on this.
Aggressive.
They said, the president of Microsoft said, we're gonna take this as our number one priority. Parentheses, no money anybody.
You have to get past us to get to our workers.
You'll have to come past us. Can you imagine the guy standing in the schoolhouse door with the president of Microsoft with his hands folded and say,
we're make sure that you get the blue screen of death on all your applications.
But again, a crass way of looking at it, though, but the price tag, what is the price tag of physically removing 800,000 Americans who have not violated the law.
But Bannonites do not care about it. I think that that's part of the optics. I think that there is a drama to that that appeals to that base. But for the Northeast, let's talk about the midterms. What does it mean for New York? Our entire immigration population with regards to those who are in the agricultural sector, a lot of their children. There's probably a number of Dreamers just in New York, from New York State to Maine alone, who are the,
Aaron, here's what. They're not going to deport 800,000 people.
That's what Sanderson was saying.
Yeah, they say they're going to deport 800,000 people. And the reason for that is they want to control those folks. They don't want to kick them out, but they want to control
them
and go to the base.
Right. Well, there's two things I'm concerned about. Because, you know, when those 800,000 individuals gave up their identifiable information, they also had their parents that are probably still out there. So, yes, maybe to control them in one level, but I actually believe them. I want to take them at their word. If they are saying that they are going to move on them and they're gearing up, I would take President Trump at his word. This is going to be ugly. This is going to be a very dark, deep scar and stain on our nation.
No question.
But the point is that, you know, again, this is that shining city on the hill. And this is what we have become.
But some would argue that you need a legal, clean way to get a clear way to get into the country. So I'm not saying that, but they will say, yes, we can be the shining person on the hill, but you need a clear pathway. But the problem is, this is where the Congress has not stepped up and the president has shown leadership.
Well, and it's the
president's job. He says, well, I'd leave it to Congress. Well, if he wants to show some leadership, he says, okay, we're going to change this rule, but here is my bill to fix it. And that's what he didn't do. He's shown no leadership here. He's punted this to Congress at a time when they have so much more on their plate. There's no way they can do this.
So, and he knows it.
And he knows
it. And there's an absurdity and a hypocrisy here, because in the case of the ancestors of Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz, there's the politics that if you have a Hispanic population that votes Republican, they get an expedited wet foot, dry foot policy. And those who are coming in as sincere refugees or even economic refugees like Cubans, they are going through this Byzantine non-process.
They want the workers. They don't want them as voters. That's the bottom line here.
That's true.
But we need to talk about it.
Aaron, I always call foul when I don't understand something. So explain the wet foot, dry foot thing.
The wet foot, dry foot policy has been a policy that has been extended to one segment of the Hispanic immigration population, specifically from Cuba. So this is not applying to other Hispanics. So it's being applied to Mexicans. It's not being expedited to war refugees from South America or Central America, where they have actually clear evidence of threats. This is why you have women bringing their children, just save their children from being killed by death squads. So where you have a real case of a humanitarian risk, that's not afforded to wet foot dry foot policy.
Yeah, because they're not communists.
The thing is, this is the absurdity of, you know, this policy is that it's not just that, because people go, well, there are some Hispanics that support it.
Well, it's easy to talk about this in big, huge numbers, but in case by case, individual by individual, that's where it's heartbreaking.
We're out of time. So we're going to take a break. Ray's ready to do the news. We're going to break
Ray.
There and.
How do you like that game last night, Ray?
You kids talk amongst yourselves. We'll take a break and be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the program and to our roundtable discussion this morning. A delight to have you with us as we talk about what's happening in our world. 6 minutes past 10 o'clock on this sixth day of September. School is back.
Yeah.
Yellow elephants were out in force this morning throughout the region.
My nine-year-old, you know, she was dressed up in glam as a doll. She wanted to get back to school. She was totally
ready to go.
Of summer. She was like, I want to go to school, Dad.
Right here in the corner. This is the crossing guard there.
Yeah, that means you can't make a right turn.
That's right. You know, I learned that once the hard way.
Yeah.
So, all right, we have some letters.
But as long as we're talking about the 6th of September, I just want to mention that it's the 47th anniversary of my marriage, which is really
congratulations.
Really? We had the 47th anniversary.
47th,
wow.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, that's pretty good, right?
That's
incredible.
For any of us to do that is pretty good.
That is totally
so that means in 2020 you will be having your 50th anniversary.
I suppose that's right.
All right.
Yeah.
Doing something lovely, I hope.
Well, whatever I'm told. Barbara.
How it works, it's the anniversary.
How do you think you get to 47?
Colleen telling you what to do.
Barbara says,
"Hi, Barbara."
Great. Can we get rid of all, in capital letters, the gangs and thugs, regardless of where they were born? I would add Trump to the list of thugs, says Barbara. Dan Healy says, "Obama, in capital letters, the deportation president." In other words, there's no question that Obama did do deportations.
Yeah,
a lot of
enforcement.
Jim, PhD, says Obama's generous idea needed to go to Congress in the first place. Trump wisely has asked that Congress come up with a proposal. He may sign it because he has a heart and knows the will of the people, but by accepting of a process less critical of his perceived intention, and that's
from, I totally disagree with that. You know, again, he did not go
alone
to Congress. He took an action instead of, as they say, sending legislation to Congress to act, you know, in a compassionate manner.
Trump, not Obama.
And his emissary Jefferson Beauregard Sessions took a direct action, you know, to again put these 800,000 souls in jeopardy and harm's way. There's a way to do this. There's a humane way to do this. There's a civilized way to do this, and they chose to be uncivilized.
And you do have to be careful about the law of unintended consequences and what you do, and so that you know, because you do need an orderly immigration process. This is a tough problem. This really is a tough problem. I'd be interested in hearing from people who think what Trump did was right, and also from dreamers. I wonder if we have any dreamers who are listening.
Yeah. But this is coming in the shadow of us turning the backs on real refugees from Syria. Remember, Syria is one of those eggs that, you know, that we cracked and scrambled in the Middle East, and they showed up. In fact, President Obama got other nations to increase their quota of refugees, and the U.S. has been, and the Republicans in particular, have been actively campaigning and blocking any Syrian refugee coming in. Again, we're actively engaged in theaters of war, which are displacing millions of people. So it's not only just the DACA. There are whole population shifts that are being caused by our policies.
And let me just
say, we're not taking responsibility.
But what do you say about the Obama folks?
We're not taking responsibility.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, here's the president today or yesterday tweeting that if Congress, who he has thrown this herring to, if Congress can't do it, then I'll do it. Now, wait a second. Either you believe that this is something that Congress should be doing.
I'll legalize it. It was nonsense.
He didn't say illegalize. He'll, you know,
he said he'll look at it
again.
Right?
He'll look at it. But, you know, what does that mean? This is a gentleman that, you know, nobody can really seriously take his word for. He is a pathological, and proven a pathological lie. You can't trust his word. We're right now facing another crisis with regards to Korea, which I know we're going to get to. But the issue of the credibility of the president and the institutions and his institutional word is in serious question and in doubt. And this underscores that.
Okay, I know we have a lot of things to go to. I only want to say one thing today. All the news is coming out of Hillary's book.
Yes.
One day she trashes one person, the next day she trashes another. But today it's Bernie. And, you know,
trashes is your editorial comment.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But she trashes Bernie, and she says she would have won otherwise. And then 4 years before, I'm not done yet. 8 years before that, would she be trashing the guy you work for, Teresa? Teddy Kennedy because he came out for Barack Obama. That's called democracy. That's called you get a choice. You know what I mean? No?
I love
this. There's just so many layers of that that I disagree with. Truth telling, Alan. Truth telling.
What, you're calling me a liar?
I think you're massaging the facts.
In the part of the book, which
so do people know what we're talking about?
Hillary's new book.
Hillary has a new book, which will officially be out next Tuesday.
But it's being leaked.
It's called What Happened. Okay. So just so people know how this works, but bookstores get the books early. So books that are embargoed are sent to bookstores. So our friends at CNN went and paid, I assume, an ungodly sum of money to some bookstore employee in Jacksonville and got a copy
of
the
book. Or not. Just got handed a book and everybody said, okay, this is how we wet W-H-E-T,
no,
people's appetite.
I don't know, because the publisher is furious. So anyway, but
says
I,
he's furious.
Well, yeah. because it goes, anyway, whatever the case. But so they go, they do it, and they put these stuff out. And then there had been some, there had been some Hillary surrogates who were taking screenshots of the pictures of the pages of the book and putting those up yesterday. They were saying that his attacks, when I finally challenged Bernie during a debate to name a single time that I changed a position or a vote because of financial contribution, he couldn't come up with anything.
True.
Nonetheless, his attacks caused lasting damage, making it harder to unify progressives in the general election and paving the way for Trump's crooked Hillary campaign.
Also true.
I don't know if that bothered Bernie or not. He certainly shared my horror at the thought of Donald Trump becoming president, and I appreciate that he campaigned for me in the general election. But he isn't a Democrat. That's
true.
Not a smear. That's what he says. He didn't get into the race to make sure a Democrat won the White House. He got in to disrupt the Democratic Party.
Bad Bernie.
Well,
Bernie is the reason.
I would even argue whether,
Alan,
you know, Hillary
every bit
is
of that's
a Democrat.
True. Oh, come on.
Every
oh, come
bit
on.
Of that
it
is
makes,
true.
It
like
makes,
it or not,
I would,
it's all true.
Hold on. Go ahead.
So distasteful.
All right.
It's all true. You just it's a painful truth for you, Alan, but it's all true.
All right.
What's painful? What's painful about it? Bernie Sanders had every right to run.
Exactly.
I voted for him, and I'm so sorry, Teresa, to have to admit that to you. And I think a lot of other people, and I've interviewed Hillary Clinton a number of times.
Her point, though, is through the general election, the damage done during the general election.
Well, except that, as she says herself, he went out and campaigned his guts out for her.
Oh, yeah. So, and let's add to the fact that, you know, the Russian hacking and leaking of her emails, which again gave some prurient details with regards to how they, what they thought of environmentalists, etc., whether they were real or not. The fact of the matter is that there is the Clinton baggage,
and to say nothing about
you can't, and you cannot
baggage.
You cannot separate the Clinton baggage, which is really a huge drag on her and a huge uphill fight. And then add
to that. Oh my
God!
I can't believe we're talking about this today in the
midst
of
well, the
Irma
fact
that
it's her
and the health care bill on
I
the
understand
floor
that, but it's
and
her
no
book.
Budget
it,
bill.
Yeah, Teresa.
What
book.
Is the Clinton
yeah,
baggage
Teresa.
You're talking about?
Yeah, Teresa. It's so inconvenient to be talking about.
I think.
What's the Clinton baggage? Is it the Whitewater hearings turned up nothing? What's the Clinton? Well, is it the email scandal turned up nothing? What is the Clinton?
Again, I think it's not a question of
is it
whether
years of being dedicated to young children.
Well,
and
maybe we could let the man speak.
Well, two things. For full disclosure, I actively worked for Bernie within the Sierra Club. There was a huge fight and a huge split. And I was part
and
of
your
effort,
past president.
And I'm
of
past national president. I was the 57th John Muir of the Sierra Club. And we ended up ultimately endorsing Hillary Clinton. We had to pull and bind up all those wounds and hurt. But the reality was is that even after that endorsement, she went on TV talking about clean coal rather than saying pivoting and going and talking about clean energy, like going to a automobile plant down in Mississippi that's manufacturing the Nissan Leaf, say, for example, and talking about clean energy and the workers there. So I think that, you know, the issues that Hillary was tone deaf on with
and
regards
so
to the
Pruitt,
environment.
Pruitt, getting Pruitt's better than getting Clinton because she wasn't clean enough on energy.
Well, the objective fact is that at the general, we really worked our hearts out because at the end of the day, we knew what a Pruitt or a Trump presidency would be.
But a lot of Bernie people stayed home.
All right, so let me ask
and
this.
And a lot of women.
No, I don't want to. I don't want to go. I don't want to go on to another topic yet. I'm enjoying this one too much. I'm sorry.
Let
me ask Alan this question, because Alan often, when we're talking about North Korea, when we're talking about Afghanistan, Alan will often ask the question, okay, but if you were president, what would you do? So if you were Hillary, Clinton, Alan, and you had gone through what she had gone through, what would you write in your book?
Well, the first thing I would say is, did you have to write a book? Of course you had to write a book, because it's all about the money. And that, excuse me, Teresa, I'm so sorry you're grimacing over there. But it's all about the money. The Clintons are all about the money.
Yeah.
Alan, come on.
Don't you think anybody, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, anybody involved in this campaign, are going to write a book after
campaign. We yell that everybody, that the president, that Trump has to, I hate to say that president thing, but that Trump keeps throwing red meat to his base. Hillary in this book is throwing red meat also, and no question about it. And again, Teresa, you're a big Kennedy fan. I remember the day as if it were yesterday that Kennedy and Carolyn Kennedy walked out onto that stage and endorsed Barack Obama during that time. And Barack Obama was great with Hillary and all the rest of it. But where are you?
And I thought that was a good thing that he did that.
Well, finally.
He didn't endorse him and then trash her for these false allegations about, you know, about pay to play. That's what she was angry about. You know, talk about the issues. Well, if Bernie had stuck with the issues.
Well, how come?
And they couldn't. Why are we talking about this?
Well, I think we're talking about
because of, it's her book. And I would even argue, why now? And I think about the institutional setback for the Democratic Party as it's starting to go before midterm.
So my question is the timing
of this particular. And listen, at the end of the day,
all those Bernie people who stayed home.
Would you let them finish?
I am a person that says, listen, if you don't get out and vote, and if you voted for Donald or you didn't vote, you facilitated Donald coming in. I am the first person to bang that drum about responsibility and that this is mud upon all of our shoes. However, that said, this book coming out at this particular point in time in the wake of the midterms, this is only providing what I call fuel for the existing base and making it, again, difficult for Democrats to come together, which is not a good thing. So I'm not sure how this book, for the sake of, again, selling and getting the headlines, and yes, it's going to do well with the sales, but it's not going to help the Democratic
Party. Well, I would also argue that the Bernie team promoting people in very conservative districts who can't win in those districts, but then dividing people is also not good for the midterms. So if you want to talk about what's not good for the midterms.
And we should know Bernie also already wrote his book.
Yeah.
I mean, he already cashed his check. Go ahead.
Yeah. So let's be clear about what is or isn't good for the midterms. Is it good for the midterms for this Bernie brigade to be promoting very, very liberal candidates in swing districts where they can't win, but it's dividing the vote and then getting discouraging people and getting them to
stay home? The mindset of the Democrats, this whole notion, this institutional notion of who can't win, and yet Donald Trump with his...
Well, Bernie couldn't win.
How do you know that?
You know, that cracks me up.
No. I want to talk on that. We don't know. We know that the country was ready for an outsider. So what they did is they picked the outsider that the Republicans put up.
We know that now.
Because
Terry Wasserman, Schultz, and others put the finger on the scale and et cetera. But the point of the matter is, set that aside. I think that the big issue.
I'm loving this. Go ahead.
Korea, healthcare, flood insurance program.
Right. But I'm not letting you. You can't hit me on the head with that stuff and then come back.
Who did bring us Child Health Plus? Ted Kennedy and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And it's about to expire, and we're not talking about it.
All right. So just let me finish this thought.
But at the end of the day is that we have an opportunity to move forward. And the question is, does this book at this particular point in time, is this settling of scores at this particular point in time really help the organization, help the party? And you can say, well, she's out of it. Well, yeah, you're out of it, but you really are out of it and you're, you know, and hurting.
I still think she wants to run again.
Well, I think she's damaged goods. I think that this is one of those cases where the Clinton baggage, and it's not because of her gender or because I would argue the Clinton
Nothing to do with her gender at all.
Listen, the Clinton, the Clinton brand, you know, is a right now is not a brand I would take to market. It actually hurts the party.
I don't.
Yeah, that evil Clinton Global Initiative that Bernie attacked.
I don't see by presenting your side and just to take the book.
Who are you talking to?
To Aaron.
I'm talking to you.
If I think a lot of us, the book title I think is right on, because I think a lot of us, no matter who we voted for in the primary, no matter who we voted for in the general election, are asking that question pretty much every single day, what happened?
Yeah.
Right. Hell happened?
Well, how could this have happened?
Yeah. This book is essential in that regard. I think this book is a necessary reevaluation. I think it's a necessary look inward. Granted, it's her perspective.
Absolutely.
And it's very powerful. I think that, you know, Democrats in general need to do a full a reevaluation of what they're speaking for. The notion that the party gets up here with this thing of who can win and who can't win, I think is a very dangerous notion. Republicans don't fight that way. They put up who's going to march their agenda. And the question at the end of the day is the Democrats need to find out what is the agenda of the working man. What is the agenda of the working man? What is the agenda of the struggling family? What is the agenda with regards to the burden, with regards to taxes? And I think that forensic review needs to be taken place.
Who has more accomplishments in that regard, Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders? Clearly she does. Bernie Sanders participated in swift voting the Clinton Global Initiative. What has Bernie Sanders done compared to the accomplishments around the globe and around the United States of the Clinton Global Initiative on AIDS, on educating women, on health care?
Yeah, I think it's really dangerous. What do you mean?
What did you say?
They swift voted.
You're likening it, obviously, to what they did to John Kerry in 2000.
That wasn't nice.
It wasn't nice what Bernie did.
No, it's not. But it's nice by using an inappropriate phrase about Bernie, swift voting it.
We have 45 seconds to.
Oh, my God, we haven't even talked about Korea. And today, the health care bill. Hearing started on the health care bill.
Well, we would have had time had you not gotten off on that subject.
No, it was my fault, and I'm glad I did.
I'm still with her. Nevertheless, she persisted.
And I think retroactively, as Joe said.
I'm with the working class. I'm with the working class voter.
We know it now.
Well, then you should be with Hillary because she's on your side.
All right. You guess what? You, unlike these other two gentlemen, you get to come back tomorrow.
Oh my God.
All right.
Now, for all the people who are writing, chastising me for interrupting Alan, I'm so sorry. And for
and
all of
vice
you people,
and vice
I'm
versa.
So sorry.
And vice
Aaron,
versa.
I don't care that I interrupted him. He and that guy.
And vice versa.
All right. My thanks to Alan Chartok, Aaron Mayer, Teresa Bourgeois. We will be back.